Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is Sperlino Material against the National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Brown.
Good morning. May it please the court, I am Bob Brown, and I represent the petitioner and cross-respondent Sperlino Materials. It is the position of the company that the board's findings in this case are not based upon substantial evidence, but upon a misapplication of the facts and the law, disassociated union animus, and supposition. What I'd like to do is begin by reviewing the evidence in the board's finding involving the assignment of drivers to take loads to the stadium project. These allegations involve the dispatch of drivers to the stadium project from the Kentucky Avenue plant before the company constructed a portable batch plant at the Lucas Oil Stadium. The general counsel had alleged that the company unilaterally kept three union adherents, Eversole, Bales, and Stevenson, from the more lucrative stadium project driving assignments because of their union activities. As a result, the board found that when a load was to go to the stadium, the company dispatchers intentionally dispatched a driver other than these three union adherents. The administrative law judge had disagreed with the general counsel at the trial level and found that the company sent the drivers with the newest trucks to the stadium. Frankly, where he came up with that conclusion is beyond me. And not surprisingly, because we had never urged such a position. Not surprisingly, the board rejected the administrative law judge's findings and then went on to find that the general counsel had proved intentional discrimination. While the company agrees with the board that the ALJ's reasoning on this point was bogus, we submit the board did not have substantial evidence to show and prove intentional discrimination. In support of its findings, the board offered that each of these individuals who they claimed was being discriminated against were on the union's bargaining committee, and that was true. Plus, they offered the testimony of these drivers and other drivers that the union leaders had been bypassed for these more lucrative stadium assignments. And then finally, the board offered that the dispatch records, which the general counsel claimed showed the lack of stadium assignments to the union adherents. Throughout the proceeding, the company denied that it had engaged in any scheme in which to deny these employees stadium assignments. Simply put, the company steadfastly maintained that it made the assignments for the stadium project in the same manner, using the same call-in list and the same methods that it does for all other customers. In other words, business was as usual for these assignments. That meant that at the beginning of each day, the top driver on the call-in list would be given the first assignment, and the second driver on the call-in list would be given the second assignment, and then after they returned, it was
you don't really engage with the administrative law judge's findings.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You don't engage. You rely with regard to this, you know, the preferred work on Davidson's testimony, which the ALJ disbelieved, and he gave reasons which you don't discuss. You know, you just ask us to accept Davidson on faith. He said, ALJ said there are inconsistencies in his testimony and so on. You don't mention that.
Are you referring to the stadium assignments, Your Honor?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. Well, in the case of the stadium assignments, the company's relying on
That's not my question.
I'm sorry?
If the ALJ says that Davis's testimony is rife with inconsistencies and you say nothing, what is our basis for rejecting the ALJ's finding?
Well, I think the basis is that in this particular case, even if you accepted what he said about Davidson's testimony, it didn't apply to this particular circumstance because it was not Davidson who made the decisions on who would be assigned to the stadium or any other job assignment. It was the two dispatchers. And he did credit the testimony.
But you rely on Davidson in discussing this work, right, in your reply brief?
I think we rely on Davidson as it relates to Mr. Stevenson's discharge. But as it relates to the assignment to the stadium, we rely on the
That's not true.
I think it is.
No, you talk about... You say Davidson had reason to conclude that the discriminatees would not be interested in the portable plant backup driver positions, right?
Well, but that's not what
I mean, that is what you say in your reply brief.
As
now,
it
the
relates
administrative
to
law judge said that Davidson's testimony was not credible. You don't deal with that.
And when we talk about that's a different issue.
I don't care what issue it is. The point is, you rely on Davidson, and
right.
The ALJ said Davidson's testimony is not credible, and you don't engage with that issue. You don't say, well, you shouldn't have found he wasn't credible because X, Y, Z. You don't do that. You present a very slanted view of the facts.
Well,
what do you have to say about what the ALJ said about Davidson's credibility?
Well, I don't believe that the ALJ, in discussing his credibility, had any basis for discrediting him on the basis...
Well, he said it was full of inconsistencies.
But there wasn't any inconsistency.
Well, you didn't say that in your brief.
I think we did point that out.
Well, certainly not in your reply brief.
Well, in the main brief, we
Well,
talked
in your
about.
Reply brief, you're relying heavily on Davidson. Right, what did you say in your main brief? I can see. Did you rehabilitate Davidson in your main brief?
I think we did, Your Honor.
You have a very brief discussion of that. You say the portable plant selection decisions were made by Davidson, who was neither involved in the union, et cetera, et cetera. And you talk about his unrebutted evidence and this and that and the other thing. But you don't say anything about the ALJ's findings that Davidson was not credible.
Well, I think, Judge Posner, that Davidson, as he relates to the portable plant drivers, is a situation where he really made the selection on the basis of objective evidence.
Well, that's what you say. You say Davidson is credible and based his decisions on objective evidence and so on. You say that,
right.
But you never take note of the fact that the ALJ did not believe Davidson. Now, you could say, well, ALJ was wrong and this and that and the other, but you don't. You just ignore it.
I don't think we ignored it.
Yes, you ignore it. Tell me where you say that the ALJ was wrong to find inconsistencies in Davidson's testimony.
I think I'd have to...
Well, all right. Don't spend your time doing that.
Getting back to, for a minute, back to the...
The answer is nowhere. The word inconsistent or inconsistencies does not appear in your brief.
It does not appear in a brief.
Not in your brief.
getting back to the issue on the preferential treatment for assignments to the stadium project, the company or the testimony of the two dispatchers were that things were done business as usual, that there was not any deviation from the normal practices. The board offered nothing to refute the testimony of the two.
Well, just a coincidence that these people were left out, is it?
Well, they weren't left out. That was the point, Your Honor. They got assignments. The evidence shows that they got as many assignments as anybody else. And that's part of our position, is that the records brought forth by the general counsel showed that they were equally as involved in the stadium assignments as anyone else. Now, the testimony of the drivers was that they were not given preferential treatment, but when you listen to the testimony of the dispatchers, it became clear that an individual did not know the job to which he was being assigned until he actually was in the truck making that delivery. So that if I said that I did not get an assignment, it was mere speculation on my part. Secondly, I'd like to talk about the board's finding that the company suspended and terminated employee Gary Stevenson because of his union activities, and the company denied him his Weingarten rights in the process. I think, like the stadium assignments, the company's position is the findings are not supported by substantial evidence in the record. To recap, this was a situation where the company had put out a handout to explain to employees why certain dues deductions were being made from their check. And in the process, they had inadvertently left the Social Security numbers on the handout. And so they went to each employee after they discovered it and said, please give it back to us. Every employee complied with that requirement, except for Gary Stevenson. And when he was asked by the batch plant operator on more than one occasion to return it, he gave a variety of reasons for not doing it. First, he said he wasn't going to do it. Then he said, I've lost it.
Can I return to Davidson for a moment?
Sure.
The administrative law judge said, his testimony that the results of the driving test played a role in the selection of the four successful applicants was contradicted by two of them. Mooney refused to take the test, and Kiefer, by his own testimony, did poorly. Moreover, Bales and Eversole were not even offered the test, and Stevenson performed well. Is that wrong?
Is it wrong? Even if it's credited, his position was that he made the decisions based on the overall evaluations, not on one.
Well, you'd think a driving test was pretty important.
Well, in this case, they were all.
And not even to offer the driving test to the three who happened to be the union supporters, just by coincidence, pretty suspicious.
Well, the three were not union supporters, all of them.
Eversole, Bales, and Stevenson, isn't it?
Pardon?
Eversole, Bales, and Stevenson?
I don't think they all testified that they weren't offered the driver's test. I think one of them testified that.
According to the ALJ, two were not offered the test, and Stevenson did well on the test.
Correct. So, I mean, one of them did well. But in Stevenson's case, that was only one factor in the evaluation.
Well, of course, the ALJ didn't believe the rest of Davidson's testimony either. He just didn't engage with that. You rely on Davidson. you completely ignore what the ALJ said about Davidson's testimony.
I understand.
That's the ostrich way of arguing a case.
Well, it is if the base, the sole basis for the determination is only his testimony.
That's what you stress.
Well, I don't think that's the case. I think what
it's the case. It's what you stress in your discussion of that portable plant, whatever it is. That's the evidence you rely on, Davidson's testimony.
Getting back to Gary Stevens, if I might, the issue there was, did we suspend him and then discharge him because of his union activities? And I think it's clear in this particular case, even through the testimony of Stevenson, that he was guilty of dishonesty and insubordination. He admitted that he refused to give it back, and then he...
Yeah, but you seem to be very forgiving of the other misdeeds of the drivers.
I don't believe that's the case, Your Honor. There's
the only evidence listed, you know, fights and accidents and what have you. You'd think accidents would be more serious.
Well, I would agree that, that some accidents could be more serious. But I don't think there was any testimony to the effect that non-union adherents engaged in accidents for which they weren't disciplined.
Well, apparently there were a lot of...
There was testimony that there were other employees engaged in dishonesty, and they were disciplined. I mean, it seems to me that the board in this particular case is trying to give Stevenson some preferential status because of the fact that he was on the union committee.
What were these other acts of dishonesty for which people were punished?
There were two other employees that were punished for lying.
Lying about what?
I can't recall right off the top of my head what it was, but there was evidence to the effect that...
You don't fire people for lying unless it's related to something.
Well,
Were they stealing?
No, they were. They had been untruthful.
About what?
As I remember, it was
about...
Well,
if you don't remember, don't say.
I don't specifically remember.
That's fine.
Well, I think the board could have come out the other way in this incident, but they didn't. And I think there's a reasonable basis for them to come out this way or the opposite way. So why should we reverse them on that basis?
Because I think, Your Honor, what it does is it allows the board, if it's to substitute their judgment for that of the company. If the company feels strongly that a person... Who is dishonest?
We want to substitute our judgment for their judgment, isn't that what it boils
down to? No, that's not really what I'm asking you to do. I'm asking that you find that there's not substantial evidence to.
Well, this is just a matter of judgment. I think you have this incident.
Well, but if there
is it worth. Is this guy done something that deserves to be fired for? Considering, of course, that he's a union hot, red hot.
Right. But if the company has a basis for what it's doing and the board does not prove discrimination, then they shouldn't substitute their judgment for that of the company. I see my time's up. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Ms. Haney.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Elizabeth Heaney, and I represent the National Labor Relations Board, which is here today seeking enforcement of its petition. There are several issues before the court, Your Honor, but they all revolve around one central theme, which is the company's determination to undermine the union and render it ineffective, either by retaliating against its three main supporters, Eversoll, Bales, and Stevenson, or by ignoring its bargaining obligations altogether. The first issue that I'll address involves the discriminatory dispatching, which occurred prior to the creation of the portable plant. It started in February, about 2 weeks after the union election. The employer started dispatching employees to the higher-paying stadium project, and while doing so, continually dispatched around Eversoll, Bales, and Stevenson, thereby depriving them of their right to the higher-paying assignment. There is significant evidence that this occurred. You have Eversoll himself testifying that he was not, though he's first in seniority, he was sent 5 weeks after they started dispatching to the stadium project. Stevenson was sent 1 month after, where Kite Kiefer, who was eighth in seniority, was going three times a week. You also have the testimony of Kiefer and Mooney, who themselves said they were neutral regarding the union, saying that they were continually dispatched around Eversoll, Bales, and Stevenson. All three, as the evidence shows, had fewer premium hours than you would expect given their seniority, and given the fact that this dispatching occurred a few weeks after the union won the election, was certified, and while Eversoll, Bales, and Stevenson, three very open union supporters, had then joined the union's bargaining committee, there is strong evidence that the company did so because of their union activity. The second issue before the court, Your Honors, involves the discharge of Stevenson, if I'll go there. You're quite right that the employer had actually discharged one other person for dishonesty. That dishonest act was the blatant theft of concrete. The employee took the concrete in his truck, drove it to somebody else's house rather than the assigned customer, and used it there, which is quite a different deed than Stevenson not holding documents and not returning them for a mere 3 hours, and returning them actually after one 10-minute face-to-face consultation with his management or with his supervisor. And at that point, Stevenson was on the bargaining committee, was meeting regularly to bargain on behalf of the union, and his union activity was still ongoing, and the company still knew about his activity. And it's also important to remember that Stevenson had asked for his union rep at that meeting, and it was not given to him, which again shows the employer's absolute refusal to recognize the union and to give the employees their union rights. Stevenson specifically asked Davidson, "I want to call my union rep. I want to ask him if I have to give these documents back." And Davidson would not allow that to happen. Given the pervasive union animus that was throughout this company, the fact that Stevenson was such an ardent and open union supporter, and the fact that his lying caused the company absolutely no harm, financial or otherwise, shows, and as Your Honor said, you can't tie this lying to the performance of his job. And he gave the information over rather quickly, shows that the company discharged Stevenson because of his union activity. With the third issue, well, actually the fourth, I've discussed the discriminatory dispatch to the portable plant, the denial of Stevenson's wine garden rights, as well as Stevenson's termination. The fourth issue would be relates to the company's failure to select the three union supporters, Eversoll, Bales, and Stevenson, for the portable plant driver position. As Your Honor correctly pointed out, they rely quite heavily on Davidson's testimony in that, and that testimony is completely rife with inconsistencies. Davidson claimed he was going to rely on two categories, and they needed to have an A or a B in both categories. Then he expanded it to five categories, but an A and a B was not going to be necessary. He stated that experience was so incredibly important. However, they hired two drivers who were completely inexperienced and one that Eversole himself had trained. In terms of the driving test, you were correct with the facts, Your Honor. Mooney refused to take the test. Kiefer broke the brakes, but they were still hired. And then the test was not offered to Eversole and Bales, and Stevenson, by the words of another witness, completely objective witness, the man who administered the test, said Stephen performed great. And Davidson could put forth no document supporting his criticisms of Eversole, Bales, and Stevenson as to why they weren't hired. But when you look at the words he stated for Mooney and Kiefer, Mooney sometimes, according to Davidson, didn't apply himself, and Kiefer didn't always have a good showing. Yet they were hired for these portable plant positions that paid $4 more an hour. They were sought-after positions, Your Honor. And there's certainly strong evidence that this had to do, again, with the union's animus. Let's not forget that when the union started its campaign and after the campaign, the operations manager, Matney, predicted that things were going to get ugly around here. The union makes them do mean things, and that's certainly what happened to these employees. Eversole, Bales, and Stevenson suffered firsthand those mean things that Matney predicted he would do. With the last two issues are related, Your Honor, and that involves the unilateral changes that the company made after the union was selected as the bargaining representative. And those changes involve, first, just the creation of the portable plant position and the selection process, the creation of a completely different selection process to select drivers for that position. The rule is quite clear that when the parties are bargaining for a first contract for a new collective bargaining agreement, no unilateral changes can be made to the employees' working conditions absent an overall impasse. And there certainly is no evidence here of an overall impasse on either issue.
I don't know what you mean by overall impact.
When the parties are bargaining for their new agreement, they have to reach impasse on every issue in that agreement before any unilateral changes can be made. So impasse overall as a whole. So every issue.
Okay.
And I should mention, Your Honors, that the parties are still bargaining.
Was the concern that bargaining over the creation of this new position, is that what was at stake?
Yes. They created this new position, and in doing so, they completely altered the employees' terms and conditions of employment. So when they created this position, the drivers would punch in at Kentucky Avenue and then go to the portable plant and would work at the portable plant. But there were times when the portable plant did not have assignments for them. Those drivers would then return to Kentucky Avenue but would be at the bottom of the seniority list. It adversely affected their employment. They sometimes would then just get sent home because there was no work at the portable plant and there was no work at the Kentucky Avenue plant. But it also affected the remaining unit employees at Kentucky Avenue plant. The effect doesn't have to be adverse. It affected their working conditions. They were moved up in seniority. And all of this was done without consulting with the union. And with regard to the selection system, the problem there is up until that point, employees had been dispatched to positions solely on the basis of seniority. Now they're being put through this completely different selection process that the employer had given no notice whatsoever.
Of course, the company says that was governed by a different agreement, the stadium agreement.
Right. The PLA is not a panacea to all the employers' problems. PLA certainly did not give them a blank check. Nowhere in the PLA does it say you can make decisions that affect your employees' working conditions without bargaining with the union. And certainly the selection system affected the employees' working conditions. They were put through a process they had never been put through before. Seniority was completely ignored. And as a matter of fact, Wiseman on page 980 of the transcript says, I gave no notice of the driving test. The the union did not even know that was going to happen. If the court doesn't have any more questions, the board just respectfully requests that you enforce this petition and please stop the company from its continuous efforts to undermine this union and to give the employees the bargaining representative that they selected quite a few years ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Haney. Anything further, Mr. Brown? You have about 1 minute.
Dealing with the establishment of the portable plant, that was covered by the project labor agreement. If they would have bargained different terms than existed in the portable the project labor agreement, they couldn't have implemented them anyway because they'd already agreed with the union as to the terms that would apply to that portable plant. So there was really nothing to bargain about in that particular situation. And in addition, within that labor agreement, as we pointed out, it allowed the company to pick whoever they wanted to do that job. There was no seniority involved, whatever method they wanted to use. And in this case, they used an evaluation system. And then lastly, as to Stevenson didn't ask for union representation. What he asked for was the right to call the union to see if he had to turn over the document. He did get union representation after his suspension and before his discharge at the interview that took place to determine whether or not they were going to convert the suspension into the discharge.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.